Ladies and gentlemen, please continue to stand by. Your webinar will begin momentarily. Once again, please continue to stand by, and we thank you for your patience.
Good morning, everyone, or afternoon, wherever you may be located. This is Lauren Rotman. I'm head of ESMS Science Engagement Team, and I want to welcome everyone and thank you for joining us for the Delivering a Campus Data Service webinar hosted by Globus and ESMS. Just a bit of background, our two organizations have been working together for years on various technical and research initiatives. Particularly in the past year, Globus and ESMED have been collaborating on outreach from webinars to workshops to try to help those in the research community who are now very much challenged with supporting data-intensive science on a whole new scale. So today's webinar is the second in a series along those lines. For today's presentation, I want to welcome Jason Zarowski, who's Science Engagement Engineer at ESMED, Steve Tiki, Deputy Director of the Computation Institute at the University of Chicago and Argonne National Lab, as well as the Globus Project co-lead, Dave Lipka, Director of the Cornell University Center for Advanced Computing and Chair of the Coalition for Academic Scientific Computation, otherwise known as CASC, and Brock Palin, HPC System Administrator and User Consultant at Kane HPC at the University of Michigan. So our first speaker will be Jason, but before I hand it off, since we're doing this webinar via the web only, you can ask a question anytime during the session using the chat function. We have some additional experts from ESMED and Globus on the sidelines here who can answer any questions while the speakers are still speaking, but we can also hold some questions to the end for the speakers to answer as well. And lastly, we're recording the session. We'll be posting it online afterwards, and we'll be sure to distribute the link to the full registration list. So thanks again, and with that, I will hand it off to Jason to get us started.
Well, thank you, Lauren. So I'm going to be starting the webinar today with a little bit of an overview of the role of national R&E networks in the mission of trying to enable science wherever the case may be, whether it be national, international, located at campuses or national labs. And we'll be talking about this using the lens of modifications that can be made to the networking systems to make sure that we enable full success. So some of the things that I'm going to go into is just a very brief introduction of what ESNet is, and then we're going to launch into an explanation of why the network has become so important for scientific innovation. We're then going to understand a little bit more about performance expectations and realities, and then close with a little bit of a discussion about how the science DMZ architecture helps services like Globus Online really succeed and ensure success for researchers. So ESNet is the high-performance network that links the DOE Office of Science researchers and facilities around the United States and then interconnects them to facilities that may be located around the world. For the most part, ESNet is going to be linking supercomputer centers, user facilities, laboratories, and in some cases universities, along with providing connectivity to other major resources that are of interest, such as cloud providers. The network itself, the ESNet network, is a national DOE user facility, and in and of itself, the mission is to ensure that we can tailor data mobility solutions for science and make sure that we do have a dedicated team of people available to answer questions, whether it be choosing the right application or ensuring that the network architecture and host architectures that are involved in the scientific innovation are tuned and working properly. As we look at this next little map here, we can see that the DOE Office of Science just doesn't encompass national lab facilities, which are represented by the little yellow pins. There may be only about 17 of those, but there's far more graduate students and tenured professors and support staff that are located at the universities around the country. And for this, the mission becomes much harder when we have to ensure that all of these people have equal access to the different facilities and can get their jobs done. So in terms of networking capability, this is a plot of the historic load of data that's been pushed across ESNet since the early part of the 1990s. And as we look here, it's been a gradual increase. And if we follow the trend line up a little bit further, we're expecting to get to the range of approximately 100 petabytes of science data per month in the year 2015 that's traversing the various links of the ESNet network. And to ensure that this is all working properly, it's not just the mission of making sure that the backbone itself is functioning, but we also need to extrapolate and get down into the lower levels to make sure that the individual users have what they need to get their work done. And really, what does that mean? As we look at the definition of mobility here, data transfer between facilities is best achieved using networks instead of other means, such as trying to physically take out disks and ship them across the country, something that some collaborations are still relying and trying to do. This is a time-consuming effort, and it's also very error-prone. The modern networks are more than capable of handling the load of science data, and we want to ensure that people are doing that because it really helps in the long run get the science done, and it helps people be more productive in what they attempt to do. And really, the ESNet network and many of the other R&E networks that are in operation today are designed and engineered for the elephant flows that often make up science data. And as we try to draw a comparison between traditional networks, if we look at something like YouTube, Hulu, Google, Netflix, traditional traffic patterns, they're smaller in size and there's more of them in number, and they form those nice diurnal patterns of users as they happen to go throughout their day. Science data is much different than this. It follows a higher load in terms of length of flow and amount of information that may need to be transferred, and it's not always related to the diurnal patterns. So we like to say that the backbone network is certainly engineered for this, but we want to make sure that campus networks are engineered for these elephant solutions as well. And local networks are typically built for business use cases, which can be sometimes very destructive when we try to push a science use case in there as well. And this comes down to the way that they're constructed. There may be firewalls. There may be naively configured or deployed routers and switches that are in the path. There may be packet loss that's caused by physical abnormalities or even congestion. And there may be lots and lots of systems that are using the default settings that come directly from the manufacturer. There may be legacy software tools such as SCP that are used for the task of trying to transfer data end to end. And there may be cultural problems that prevent us from really getting the network into the workflow of science and allowing it to work properly. So all these different things pushed together really lead to us needing to design networks that are capable of handling both the business use case or the enterprise use case, as well as the different scientific tasks. So if we look at a little bit of a chart here that tries to plot out network expectations and realities, if we were dealing with a one terabyte-sized file or data set that comes from any form of scientific innovation, and we were attempting to move this across networks of various capabilities, those are the time expectations that we may expect. So if we look right in the middle there at the 1 gigabit per second network, it could take about 3 hours to transfer that information. On modern 10 gigabit networks and even faster, it can take on the order of minutes to try to get this end to end. We can also then compare this to the speeds of a typical USB 2.0 portable disk, which has remarkably reduced throughput versus that of the network. When we try to examine what the performance may look like in a typical campus environment, let's say one that's using a firewall, we also run into problems, particularly if the firewall isn't capable of handling the load of the traffic or it's been misconfigured. So we look at two examples here. On the top, we're trying to pass traffic through a firewall on the campus, and we see that we're severely limited in one of the directions. On the bottom, when we move the machine that was doing the transfer one step away from the firewall, just outside of its control, we can see that performance returns back to expected value in both directions. So this sort of example shows that while the firewall does have a very accurate and necessary job on campuses to protect users from all the bad things that may happen on the network, it needs to be integrated cleanly into the science use case or we can severely impact people's workflow. As another illustration of the effect of packet loss on modern data transfer tools, we have this chart here which shows the effects of packet loss as we try to transfer information a little bit further away in terms of distance. So on the bottom of that chart, we have round-trip time in milliseconds, and on the left, we have our observed throughput. The purple line that's at the top of that graph is the situation where we have no packet loss, and as we can see, we have very high throughput, and it remains high even as the latency increases. Even with a very small amount of packet loss, and in this case it's 0.0046%, and that's not a typo, that amount of packet loss can reduce throughput to dramatic amounts as the latency increases between the two hosts that are participating in this transfer. And this goes to prove that we need to ensure that our networks are running loss-free, or science is not going to be able to achieve anything. And two other examples of what this looks like in terms of performance. There are many different types of soft failures on networks, and here are two examples. On the top, we have a host that hasn't been properly tuned. And as you can see with the green portion of that graph, the second that we tune that host, we're able to see performance reach a little bit higher expectation. That doesn't address the blue portion of that graph, of course. There were some other problems that needed to be dealt with in this particular example, and that goes to prove that performance problems may be in layers, and we may not be able to solve everything with one single swipe. The bottom graph shows another example where we had a gradual failure of an optical line card, and this is a good example of why regular monitoring, sometimes delivered through software like the Persona Project, can help you detect these problems before they become a problem for your users. So this leads us into a discussion about the actual data transfer tools, and we will be discussing Globus Online today, but as a comparison metric, we can look at the results of other tools on a statically configured network here, approximately 53 milliseconds in latency, and the attempt to move some information end-to-end. And as we can see, there are different applications available, whether it be SCP, the patch version of SCP, FTP, or Globus. And really, Globus Online sets itself apart from these other tools because it does allow us to get into the high ranges of throughput. And it's really a tool that's designed for scientists, designed by scientists. So this all leads into the discussion of what this needs to be in terms of a network architecture. And the Science DMZ really is a model of four network architectures: system configuration, security policy, and performance tools. It's all of these things really together. And when we try to combine these together, we're able to create an optimized environment for data-intensive science. So the Science DMZ does meet the specific requirements of these scientific use cases. This is for the elephants. And we have a characteristics here that set it apart from what the general purpose or business-like network really needs to have. So we normally view this as an interlocking Venn diagram of the different portions of the architecture itself. In the middle, it's the architecture, which is the... I'm sorry about that. Let me go back to the slide that I was on. In the middle, we have the network architecture, and this is the implementation itself. It's a dedicated location where the DTN or the data transfer node that would be running an application like Globus Online would be located. And it's also made up of an enclave that's put off to the side of the business network. And we have a picture that's coming up that'll show this. Working hand-in-hand with the architecture, we have the dedicated systems for data transfer. These are well-constructed servers that are well-tuned and running scientific applications that are used for high-performance data transfer. And then we also have the performance testing and measurement infrastructure. In our case, we are recommending the Personar suite of tools, which does enable fault isolation. It helps to verify that operations are correct, and it is widely deployed within the network infrastructure of ESNet and other R&E partners. So in terms of an architectural diagram, you can see this as a very simple cartoon, and nobody's network really looks like this, but the principles are really the same no matter where we're going to be going. We're attempting to split off the scientific activity from that of the enterprise network, and this is done really at the border. We can kind of generate a split into two different worlds here. We can put our enterprise concerns off to the right and have them protected by firewalls or filters, whatever the case may be. And off on the bottom there, we have a dedicated Science DMZ switcher router where within this infrastructure, we're still going to need to have per service security policies and controls, but we're able to give the high-performance infrastructure, whether it be a dedicated data transfer node, a high-performance computing facility, a computing cluster, whatever the case may be, that has direct access to the outside world without having to go through any devices that would impact its performance. We also, and the most important thing here, we have monitoring that lets us know if things are working correctly or incorrectly. And we're able to establish these different access patterns. We have our site-to-campus access pattern, which can still go through the firewall and give good performance due to the low latency. But we also have our clear high-bandwidth path that allows us to get to the outside world. So the Science DMZ does take on many forms, and this was only really just a very quick taste of it. There are many other ways that this can be designed, and we do encourage people to ask questions if you're interested in implementing this by yourself on your home institution. It can be merged into many different design patterns, including a small installation just for a project or two, a larger facility that may be located inside of an institution. Really, whatever the use case is, we can most likely design an architecture that would fit this. And many universities, including some people that may be represented on this call, may have received funding from the NSF recently due to the CCNIE round of funding. And this is encouraging people to develop the Science DMZ on their own campuses, and we do welcome questions from those people as they get going. So to tie this into Globus Online, and then Steve will be taking over in another minute or two, we recommend Globus Online as the application of choice for data transfer, mainly because of the features, and here's some of them that are available here. It does allow high-performance parallel streams and optimization for both small and large files. It has the ability to auto-restart and set up transfers that may occur over a longer length of time. It has different security models that are available, and it does allow people to have firewall and NAT traversal support if your environment is not able to be fully outside of such things. This goes hand-in-hand with dedicated hardware, and we do have information available on how to construct that. So in closing, I'd just like to point out a couple more things here. Our main website has a lot of information on this where you can read some more if we've gone over something that we haven't covered today. We're also offering workshops that are going to be occurring in 2014 called Operating Innovative Networks, and there's a web link there where you can learn more about that. Some of the features of this workshop will be talking about Globus, Science D&Z, and software-defined networking. And we have two items that are going to be featured in the SC13 conference this year for people who will be attending. One of them is a full-day tutorial on Globus Online, and the other is a paper on the Science D&Z. So if there are any questions about that, you're always welcome to reach out to us via the engagement list, or you can sign up for information on future alerts via the Faster Data events list. So thank you, and I believe Steve is going to be taking over next.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Let me go ahead and share my desktop out here so you can see what I'm going to be demoing. All right. Thank you. I'm Steve Tiki from University of Chicago and Argonne. I'm one of the co-leads of the Globus project. And so what I'm going to show here is I got a few slides to kind of intro what is Globus Online, and then I'll move into some demonstration of how it actually works so you get a real good feel, kind of give a whirlwind tour of Globus Online, and wrap up, and then we'll hand it off to Dave and Brock for some more user experience of this on campuses. So thought I'd start with kind of what is a campus data service, right? The title of this webinar was about building your campus data service with Globus and ESnet and Science DMZs. And so, you know, I was thinking, well, what are some of the use cases? What are we hearing from users about campus data services? You know, we're hearing a lot of things like, you know, I'm a researcher, I need a good place to store or back up my big research data at a reasonable price. Right? I've got my data maybe living in not very good spots, unmanaged storage or lab servers. I want a good, more central facility that is managed, that the campus has a little more management capabilities around, right? But I want something that just kind of works for me as a researcher, as a place for that big data. I want to easily, quickly, reliably move it or mirror portions of it to everywhere else I need it to be, right? Maybe I need to get portions of my campus HPC system or my lab systems or my desktops or laptops for local analysis or visualization. I need to get out to national facilities like Exceed or NERSC or otherwise, or I even need to get that data to cloud services like Amazon, where maybe I'm starting to do some more processing. Right? So that's all got to be easy, quick, and reliable. I need to share it, right? I've got colleagues all over the world often that I want to be giving portions of my data to, right? It's not that I want to make everything publicly available, but I want to have something, you know, that I can really trivially share my big data with my colleagues at other institutions from this. I want to publish my data, right? So maybe I want to take portions of my data associated with a paper that I've published and put it out in a network accessible place where people can download and reproduce my research results. I want to archive my data. Maybe I'm done with the project and I don't necessarily need it online anymore, but I want to put it away in case I need it in the future, right? So these are the sorts of use cases that we hear a lot of people asking for and a lot of campus administrators sort of grappling with how they deal with. So Globus is a piece of a solution puzzle to solving this sort of campus data service challenge. So what is Globus? All right, so we at the University of Chicago, you know, we're sort of basically trying to create high-quality software as a service to enable researchers to manage their data, act as a nonprofit service provider to our community. With what we've got today with Globus, it's big data transfer and sharing, right? So it's, I need to be able to move my big data around where it needs to be. I want to share it with my colleagues with, say, Dropbox-like simplicity. And what I mean by this is not cloud storage, right? We don't store things in Globus Online. We just move it around where it needs to be. But, you know, a lot of researchers I know use tools like Dropbox for sharing their small data, their doc files, their PDFs, stuff like that. But that model doesn't work so well when you get up to the big data. But, yeah, you still want that same level of simplicity that users can really trivially manage and control the sharing with their colleagues, wherever those colleagues are. And third is directly from your own storage system. This is kind of corollary of the first two. Right? The cloud sync model, centralized cloud storage, kind of breaks down when you get to big data for performance and cost reasons. So if you're going to be doing big data transfer and sharing, it's got to work from your own systems. And so in a nutshell, this is what Globus is providing. You can think in terms of two kind of primary use cases of the sorts of interactions that Globus handles. First one is file transfer and synchronization. Examples here is maybe I'm a user of an HPC facility on campus or at a national facility, and I need to move my data to and from that facility for doing my analysis or get my simulation results back. Right? How do we make that trivial? Such that as a user, I can log into the system, sort of specify what I want to move or be mirrored, right, with the synchronization, think sort of rsync style unidirectional mirroring, right, I'll log in, hand off my request to the system, and have it happen. Have faults handled, get good performance out of it, work properly across multiple security domains, all these sorts of niceties that, unfortunately, we often aren't used to in our community, right? We take for granted in our consumer world, you know, that we can stream gigabytes and more to our house with services like Netflix, but why isn't it that easy for us when we're moving around our science data? So this is kind of the first case. So HPC facilities, or another example of this is perhaps I'm running a scientific instrument like a genome sequencer or a light source or some microscope that's producing a bunch of scientific data that I need to be able to download off of that device and get back to my system or get off to a place where I want to do the analysis on it. Right, so these are kind of the standard use cases for transfer and sync. More recently, we've added sharing capabilities. Right, the big request we got was, okay, great, I can move my data around amongst my systems, which is the transfer and sync, but how do I share it with you, even if you do not have an account on my storage system? That's the problem we solve with sharing. Right? Try and make it really easy for a user to go select specific folders out of their local storage or their desktops or laptops or the lab servers and share that to other users that they're collaborating with. We deliver all this as software as a service. Right? So Globus is a service that we operate at the University of Chicago. It's actually hosted on Amazon across multiple data centers, all the sort of reliable, great infrastructure we can get from a cloud provider like Amazon. But as a user, this means you don't download and install anything. You, as an admin, minimal footprint to get yourself connected to it. It's software as a service that we operate. It's got web interface, which I'll show in just a minute here in demonstration. We've got a command line interface for us old school people who like command lines, and it's also really good for scripting and the like. And REST interfaces behind all of this as well, such that sort of anything we can do in our web interface, you can actually do through the REST APIs if you want to integrate it into your own more custom applications. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. By offering it this way, it reduces the IT operational cost for you. Right? You're not installing and managing and operating services. It's just service that you leverage. New features are automatically being available. We're deploying new capabilities, bug fixes, new features, literally weekly with the service. We run a help desk around all this, so you can go out to, for example, to support.globusonline.org and submit tickets there, whole help desk behind it, community forums, documentation, things like that available. And then, of course, the service is all about moving the data around amongst wherever you want it to be. We got to make it very easy for you to take your storage systems, whether it's your servers, your supercomputers, your laptops, your desktops, and connect all of them to the Globus Online cloud so that Globus Online can do its thing, so it can move the data between them, so it can do sharing from that. And for that, we have a family of tools we call Globus Connect. We have desktop versions and server versions. I'll show a little bit of that in my demo as well. All right, so in a nutshell, what we're really talking about here today is to create a campus data service where, a campus can deploy a system that can manage their users' data at scale, reasonable price, moderate price. The formula for that is, that we're suggesting is pick your favorite storage, right? With Globus Online, we're not dictating a particular type of storage. We layer on top of existing systems. So you can pick, if you've got good in-house expertise on particular types of storage systems that you can manage, with very minimal effort and has the right properties that you like, great. You can back that up how you want or not, right? You can define sort of your storage and your qualities of service around that. Put that in a science DMZ, as Jason talked about with DTN, sort of properly get that storage system on the network so that the tools will work really well with it and get good performance. Add Globus Online essentially as the user interface to this. As you'll hear later from from Dave and Brock, you know, this is, in some sense, our big value add is trying to provide that really good user experience to be able to do these sorts of things. And optionally, last, is Globus itself also is really a platform that you can build additional, more specialized web applications on top of so that you can leverage this campus data service for all sorts of interesting things, and I'll talk about that a little bit later as well. So with that, let's jump into a quick demonstration. So let me go over to the browser, and I'll go to globusonline.org. Right, it's software as a service. Point your web browser at it. Works on all the standard browsers. As a new user, I sign up, right? Sign up form is just fill this out, click register, and you've got an account. It's free for anybody. Just go do it. I'm not actually going to do it because I already have too many accounts. So instead, let me go ahead and log in. So I can type in my username and password here that I just established my login. But, you know, we at universities, we have good identity systems, right? I have my University of Chicago campus login, and I'd like to use that for single sign-on into this ecosystem. So we have support for that right out of the box with Globus Online. So instead of logging in with my username and password, what I can do is log in as an alternate identity, in particular an InCommon identity. InCommon is this federation of universities primarily who have created this identity infrastructure that allows services like Globus Online to leverage your campus login. So and say go ahead and proceed. This will redirect me over to my University of Chicago site. Oops, and actually it didn't prompt for my password because I had already done it in this browser session. So the first time you do it, what you'd actually see there is it'll pop up my University of Chicago page, and you'll see that in a moment on some other stuff. I log in using my University of Chicago ID, and then it redirects to Globus Online. But the beauty of the systems, the InCommon and Shibboleth services, is once I've logged in a browser session to my campus identity provider, it's now available for single sign in my browser session. So I just got, you know, signed in here. But Globus Online sees this and says, I don't recognize this. I've not seen Tiki at UChicago before. What do you want to do? Do you want to create a new account for this user? Or do you want to link this login method to an existing Globus Online account? So I'll link it to my account that I just created. Sign in. So I've done that linkage. So now, one time I did that, from now on, I can log into Globus Online using my campus login. And just to show you what that looks like, let me actually this time completely close my browser so it gets rid of the cookies that caused the single sign-on before. Go back to Globus Online, log in. It remembers that I'm using CI login, do that. Now it will redirect me back to University of Chicago. Log in with my University of Chicago ID. It'll take me back to Globus Online and log me right in. Right. So first step I'm showing here is we've got really good integration with the university community, identity community, so that as users I can log into Globus Online using my standard campus identifiers, right, campus standard login. Now having done that, of course, it's file transfer and sharing. So let me go ahead and do one. I'll go out to University of Chicago. There's a what we call an endpoint. All an endpoint is a storage system that's running the Globus Connect software that attaches it to the Globus Online cloud, right? So I can log into this endpoint now, and, you know, sort of put the right footprint of local service so I can talk to the storage system. And we just give it a simple name. Anybody can create endpoints. They can create server endpoints, personal endpoints. In this case, this is the University of Chicago's Research Computing Center. It's their GPFS file system running within the RCC on their HPC system. So let me go ahead and log into that. You notice it did not prompt me for another password. Right? The reason is because this particular endpoint is expecting my University of Chicago ID through InCommon and all that magic so that we can provide single sign-on. So again, within your campus environment, now what this enables is your users can have complete single sign-on using your campus ID into Globus Online and back to your campus resources. But as a user, of course, I have other endpoints I like to use. So let me go out to, like, for example, Trestles. This is a supercomputer out at San Diego Supercomputing Center. In this case, what it needs for login is my Exceed identity. And Exceed is a national infrastructure, right? And so I need to log into it the first time in order to talk to Trestles. And so we call this activating an endpoint, providing my login to the appropriate identity provider, getting back a short-term ticket that Globus can use to now talk to this system. So let me go ahead and do that. This will redirect me out to the Exceed site, right, to the Exceed portal login page. type in my standard feed portal password here. Hit sign in. It'll redirect me now back to Globus Online and log me right back in, right into Trestle. Right. So now I'm logged into two different systems, two different security environments across the wide area network, and now I can do a transfer. So let's say, let's take a couple files here. We'll take these two files and transfer them over to Trestle. Click the button, says transfer request submitted successfully. Doesn't mean the transfer is completed. It means it's now been handed off to Globus Online. I could now log out, walk away, come back later, check on status. It's almost like a job in that sense, except that my jobs will never block on your jobs. Right? So I've now submitted into Globus. I can come back, check the status of it by going over to the view transfers, and here's the task that we submitted. Here's the, if I click on it, I can drill in, see more information, you know, where it's from and to and number of files transferred, number of bytes. I can even drill into really detailed event logs. So, for example, if there's faults, you know, maybe servers failing or storage, you know, quotas exceeded, I'll see all that within my event log so I can, you know, diagnose what's going on, or my administrators can help me with that as well. So that's it, right? That's come in, create a new account, log into a couple systems, fire up a transfer, off and running. There's a few more features available down in the more options here. I won't go into much detail other than to say, you know, you can give it labels. These three options together are the moral equivalent of an rsync minus av minus minus delete, right? So only move the files that have changed since the last time. By default, we do extra levels of verification on the files. You know, you get into really big data, TCP, storage systems, RAID systems, they're not reliable. You can actually end up with undetected bit corruption of your data. We see this in the wild when you get to these data levels. And so one of the things we do is, after transfers, by default, automatically reread all the data back in, and if it's not right, we'll keep trying. We'll treat it as a fault and resume where we left off and try again. You can also encrypt transfers if you want. By default, it's authenticated but not encrypted. You could turn this on, or as an endpoint, you can force encryption for all transfers against your endpoint. So that's transfer between existing systems. But, of course, I have my own systems, right? I'd like to do uploads and downloads to my laptop. So for that, as I mentioned, we have Globus Connect. So let me go ahead and create an endpoint. I'll add my laptop to Globus Online so I can get to it. So all I do is give it a name, create a setup key. We'll download the Globus Connect installer. We have versions for Mac, Linux, Windows, runs on a zillion different flavors of these. You know, simple installer, drag and drop. I've got a version on there, no big surprise. And let's go ahead and start it up. Go out to Applications. There it is. Open it. Paste in my setup key. And we're up and running. So now you see up in my menu bar, I've got this new item in the tray. It's not a client. I never use this directly other than to set preferences. So it's a lot like the Dropbox model, right? I run this little agent that attaches my machine to this cloud, to the Globus Online cloud. Right? But I, now having done that, I can say, you know, for example, what access does this Globus Connect have on my machine? And by default, it's my home directory denying access to my security files. But if I've got a USB drive attached to this machine, I can say select it, open it, make it read-writable. Right, so I can control what I allow access to on this machine. Same is true on the server versions. But now having done that, it's just an endpoint. So I can now go to it, my laptop. There it is. I can, let's upload a couple files. We'll take this file 1. And let's actually get something. I'll just take that file 1, upload it to the HPC system. So everything else is the same. It's now just another endpoint. Again, the Globus Connect for laptops and desktops, this personal version, will run through NAS and firewalls. I could shut down my laptop, walk away. Next time I open it up, the transfer will keep going right where it left off. Right? It's meant to be just this a resilient client that can connect my laptop my desktop to this system. I do not need admin privileges to run it or anything like that. Right, so that's uploading, so I can do uploads, downloads, recursive directories, all that sort of stuff as well. Now, that's kind of moving the data. That's that first use case I mentioned, you know, transferring in sync. But as I mentioned, what a lot of people really want to do is share. They want to say, I've got this folder over here. Say that's my project directory, again, living at University of Chicago on its GPFS file system on its HPC cluster. But I want to share that to another Globus Online user who does not have an account on this system. So that's the new capability we've just recently introduced. It's in beta right now, and will actually be final release next week. So all I need to do is say select the folder and say share. And what I'll do with this is create what we call a shared endpoint. And all this really is it's a virtual name. It's sort of a virtual endpoint where I'm not moving any data or anything like that. I'm just saying if I go to Tiki Share, what I'm really doing is going to UCRCC sharing this particular folder. Right? But it's now an endpoint. So now I can go to it and do things against it. So that looks a lot like that because it's the same data. But now having done that, I can put access control rights on it for any Globus Online user. So for example, I'm logged in this other browser over here just so cookies don't collide. I'm logged in as another user, SJT. So let's go ahead and share this folder with SJT. I just put that in, and that's all there is to it. So now over here I can say, let's go over to Tiki hash share. And there it is. Same thing. Now maybe I've got an account, SJT has an account out at NERSC. We'll go to that machine, log in there, and wait for that to come back. Sometimes the network can be a little slow in some of these. Try that again. NERSC is having some problems. Just tried it about 15 minutes ago, so I wonder if NERSC is having a few issues. But I could go somewhere else. Any other endpoint. There it is. Okay, came back. Now I can do transfers, right? So I can pick a folder or a directory or anything like that. So let's take this folder one and transfer it across to NERSC, right? So what did I just do there, right? As Tiki, as one user who had an account at University of Chicago, logged in, created a shared endpoint, gave rights to SJT to get access to that file. SJT logged in, went to it, and transferred data out to a spot that SJT has access to. And if we refresh it, which there it is. There's the folder one, right? So that's sharing. Now, of course, there's access control on all this. So you notice I only gave read-only permission. So if I try and create a folder 6, this will fail because, you know, SJT doesn't have access. So let's go give SJT access. Do it again. And it works, right? So full access control. And then the last bit of this is we also have, in addition to sharing to individuals, we can share to groups. So I can say things like create my group with my Globus team in it. I can set policies on group visibility and membership. I define my group, right? I get to define what it is. Here's the members of it. You notice SJT's in here. So with that group, I can do sharing to groups as well. And even on folders within a shared endpoint. So I can say, let's take this experiment 2, share it out, share to the Globus team group. Use it. And now I've shared that folder. And now, again, if I go over here, refresh as SJT, there it is. Just that one folder because that's all that's been shared. Right? So really trying to make this super easy to do the sharing. So let me jump back and just sort of finish up then with slides. You know, there's a lot more to Globus Online, but that's the crux of it. We, as I mentioned, we have a Globus Connect version for servers. So any Linux server, you know, about 15 or 20 different variants of Linux are supported at this point. Makes it really trivial to take your server and make it work just like UCRCC or NERSC DTN, as you saw in that demo. They're just running Globus Connect server, tied to your identity domains, all that. As I mentioned earlier, Globus also, you know, everything I've shown you so far is the software as a service, right? The end user application that scientists can use to move their data around. But everything we've done also is available through REST APIs as a platform so that if you have more custom needs, in addition, you can layer that on top. A few examples, we've got a project that we have called Globus Genomics, which is Galaxy, you know, which is a genomics analysis platform sitting on top of Globus Online for a login and data transfer so I can create Galaxy workflows that'll move my data using Globus Online right into my workflows, all hosted on Amazon with dynamic scheduling, dynamic provisioning of compute nodes, right? So that's one example. Other ones, KBase is a DOE systems biology project using Globus as a basis for all its users. University of Exeter is an interesting one of a university that's built a campus data service and then used that to build an archive service on top of it where users can upload data to this data service but also associate metadata with it that gets published into their DSpace service. So that was a very simple little web application they were able to create on top of Globus that leverages all of it and extends it to provide even more capability. Another project, CI Connect, which adds compute capabilities deeply integrated with Globus. So lots of interesting things happening on that. And then finally, you know, we're, as I mentioned earlier, right, we're a nonprofit service provider in the nonprofit research community. We've been creating software for this community for a long time. The problem is sustainability, right? It's hard. You know, the joke is as soon as something gets funded, as soon as something's working, it stops getting funded. So what we're starting to do is introduce paid services, premium offerings within the set of capabilities of Globus Online for our community for sustainability, so that we'll be around 5, 10, 15 years from now doing this. And some of this is tied to support, some of it functionality. So as a nonprofit research education user, of what you saw in that demo, file transfer, sync, creating your endpoints, and even accessing shared endpoints, being the recipient of sharing, that's all free and remain free. If I want to create shared endpoints, we have typical cloud pricing, peer-to-peer transfers between my desktops and laptops. We also have commercial pricing for this. We also have a set of things that are good for sites, for administrators. We have what we call a managed endpoint, which gives you support, gives you a management console, usage reports against your endpoints. You can buy plus subscriptions and hand them out to your users. We can do site branding. So, you know, think skinning of Globus Online to make it look like your site, various other things like that. And, again, we have commercial through Net Plus pricing. We'll soon be announcing, hopefully, or making available Internet through Net Plus pricing and offering for Globus. So that's really it. Campus Data Service, you know, why do it with this way? You know, we can provide the great user experience to your users. Gives you as an administrator very low administrative burden of all this because it's all software as a service, uses very minimal footprint you have to operate. You control and manage your storage, right? You can decide what you want to use, your quality of service, something that fits your needs best. You can extend this with your own applications and all of this with the premium offerings that support it. So with that, give it a try, and I will turn it over to Dave at this point.
Okay, thank you, Steve. I'm just bringing up my slides now. Okay, thank you. My name is David Lifka. I'm the director for the Center for Advanced Computing at Cornell University in Ithaca. I'm also the director for research computing at the Weill Cornell Medical College, which is in Manhattan, New York. And today I'm going to share with you a little bit about what our center does and who we support. And then I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that we've been doing with Globus Online and how important it has been to some of our new service offerings. So we were asked to tell a little bit about Cornell in brief, so here's some highlights. Founded in 1865, you can see our sort of research budget here, our size of our staff and faculty. Then we have the medical school in Manhattan, as I mentioned. We also have one in Qatar. And then we just recently launched a new tech campus in Manhattan called Cornell Tech. This is a picture, the bottom picture there on the right. That is the architect's rendering of our new campus that they'll be breaking ground for in January. It's a 12-acre site on Roosevelt Island, right across the river from the medical school. So that's a new sort of exciting graduate school focused on technology innovation and startup businesses. So the CAC, the Center for Advanced Computing, is what's known as a core facility. So at Cornell, the model for delivering services to researchers is the core facility model, where the cores provide services that researchers need across campus or for specific units of campus, and they do so on a cost recovery basis. And different cost recovery models are allowed. The CAC charges for all of its services. And we do get subsidized by the provost to make our rates very competitive. So the most important things that we do is really consulting, and that's helping faculty with startup packages, helping them get clusters up and running, helping them with software development and workflows and things like that. We have over 30 private HPC systems that we run for groups and faculty members. And we have something called RedCloud, which is our cloud computing offering, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a minute. We do have a DDN for storage, so we basically have high-performance scalable disk storage on our DataDirect network device. Other units are able to layer services on top of that. So, for example, the life sciences group uses Gluster on top of the DDN to provide a large single namespace for its researchers, and then they recharge our costs out to their users. We just launched an archival solution, which I'll tell you more about in a minute. We also host databases. And then the other thing that we do is we try to bring our special abilities to bear on NSF-funded grants. And so you can see here's a sampling of some of the grants that we're actively participating in. In Exceed, we participate in systems and operations, in log file analysis, in education and training through our virtual workshop program. And we also, I'm the coordinator for the Exceed architecture team, of which Steve is one of the architects. We were formerly on the NSF TAC Ranger Award for training and virtual workshops, and now we are on that on Stampede for the same. And we're working on a grant with Steve and Ian on an STCI award for managing cloud usage and allocation and accounting. And we're really focusing in on that this year. Okay. Here's a map of our connectivity. So we are connected to the internet at 10 gigabits. We were one of the original NLR members, and that sort of means it's still available. You can see that on the right, but it's sort of we're really focusing more and more on NYSERNet, and which is a statewide network, and Internet 2. You can see here that we have redundant paths off campus to Internet 2. One goes to the west of our Cayuga Lake up through Geneva and into Rochester, and the other one goes on the east shore of Cayuga Lake up to Syracuse. And so that gives us redundant paths for failover. And my last slide is some of the services that we're using today that leverage Globus Online. So the thing we just recently launched a research archival solution July 1. We started with about 150 terabytes of storage, and we've already had to add another 150 terabytes of raw storage. So we're growing fast. Our price point was designed to be competitive with Glacier, but provide more feature functionality. So this is a Cornell resource. We charge $100 per terabyte per year. It's on our DDN storage, so it's RAID 6. It's 10 gig connectivity, and the access is strictly through Globus Online. And we are going to be launching the multi-user connect on that as well, so that not only can you archive your data there, but you can share it, as Steve showed in his demonstration. We think that's a really important capability for researchers. When we were looking into launching this, initially we thought we would do something with S3, and we looked around, and we are a modest-sized staff of about 14 people. We didn't have a development staff that could work on the open source versions of S3, and we were really worried about providing a high-quality production solution. So instead of doing sort of an open source S3 implementation, we decided to go with Globus Online. And the advantage there is that it takes very, very little staff effort to maintain our Globus Online presence. And that's really where most of the costs come for any of the disk-based solutions. As soon as you start providing mount points and things like that and different file systems and what have you, the staff costs go up, and then you can't afford to do it at that price point. We like Globus Online. We like the interface a lot. We also like the fact that you can script it, and so we've been working on a set of examples for users that'll give you an rsync type capability with Python, where you can have it move your files over to the archive whenever you change your files, for example, on a scheduled task every night or something like that. And then this really it became important for the medical school. We have a new, many of you have a precision medicine initiative, and the sequence data that they have is, A, it's very big, and B, it has PHI, personal health information identifiers in it, meaning it has to be secure. So the map picture in the middle, what we did is we extended our medical school firewall in Manhattan to Ithaca. So it's a private network in our data center. And The nice thing about Amazon is the data doesn't with Globus Online is the data doesn't flow through Globus Online at Amazon. Globus Online is just telling the endpoints to move data from, for example, the medical school to Ithaca, and you can, as Steve showed, you can do that in an encrypted way. So it's a secure end-to-end solution, and it's 10 gig to Ithaca, and we're going to be launching that this fall at the same price point. So we're pretty excited about that, and we're actually also working with our Qatar campus to replicate there so that you could actually have three geographically distributed copies of your data if you wanted for $100 each. In Ithaca, where we have basic, you know, a lot of basic research, not secure data necessarily, what we're telling people to do is if you really have data that you're worried about, put a copy in Amazon Glacier and put a copy on our archival solution. Use the Glacier copy for disaster recovery only, because when you pull the data out of Glacier, that's when it's expensive, both in terms of time to get your data back and in networking costs from Amazon. But you can use the 10 gig version that's sitting in Ithaca for very fast transfers in and out. The other thing I should tell you about Globus Online is that we've been working with Steve, and I don't know if Steve will want to talk about this at all, but we're anxiously awaiting a new Net Plus service as part of Internet 2 that gives you sort of a la carte access to a lot of the Globus Online features. And so we will be, the Center for Advanced Computing will be joining that and coming in at the right level. That includes having a set number of multi-user Connect clients that we can share with our users. So we're excited about that coming forward. The other thing that we've been doing, so after Hurricane Sandy in Manhattan a little over a year ago, the medical school researchers obviously got nervous and some of the schools got hit pretty hard about what we're going to do about computing and being able to keep things running if we have, you know, an extended power outage. And so we had something called Red Cloud, which is a hybrid cloud. It's eucalyptus-based, so it's Amazon-compatible. We've been running that in Ithaca, and it's been successful. But now we're going to also, on that same secure network, run something called Red Cloud Secure so that people can do HIPAA-compliant work on the med school and launch VMs in Ithaca from Manhattan. We'll also have the same hardware set up and software set up in the data center in Manhattan and, again, in Qatar, so that all the three campuses can share those secure clouds for bursting to each other and for disaster recovery and also just for bursting. And then the last part of Red Cloud is software as a service, where we run the MathWorks MDCS, which is their parallel compute toolbox backend, where you can run MATLAB, parallel MATLAB applications. And it's all done through the MATLAB interface, so it's completely seamless from your desktop to this resource. So we've been running this for quite a while. And the Red Cloud and Red Cloud software as a service with MATLAB are available to outside of Cornell as well. So if you go to our website, www.cac.cornell.edu/redcloud, you can see the rates for those services, and they're available. We are considering opening up the research archival solution to outside. It would be a little bit more money than $100 a terabyte per year. But again, our primary focus this year has been on the Cornell community. But if it continues to be successful, it's likely that we'll extend that resource to the academic community as well. That's my presentation. Thank you very much for your time.
Hi, so I'm Brock Palin at the University of Michigan. So I'm going to give a quick overview here of how we've kind of used Globus here at Michigan. A few things about how we look at Michigan. Oh, it looks like my slides got squished. We have a relatively large graduate program and a large research budget exceeding $1 billion. And one thing that's kind of unique about Michigan is we're a very wide, flat, type organization, so there's a lot of independence between the different units and schools. You know, it's kind of unique to have a top-ranking engineering, medical, business, law, physics, you know, tons of different programs dispersed across different areas to be so highly ranked and so well recognized, and to be doing so many different types of research. We're also seeing higher and higher use by the non-traditional sciences and even some things that people maybe want to classify as sciences, getting into the science field and using things like big data and other things, using computational resources. So where I come into this is I'm one of the admins on one of the few university-wide resources for scientific computing, a resource called Flux. And yes, that actually is a photo of it there. It's pretty much the only university resource for HPC on campus. But one unique thing about it is that there is no long-term storage associated with it. There's currently no university-provided archive service. So we're looking at 12,000-plus cores, 215 active projects. And the unique thing about Flux is we kind of run it like Amazon. So 215 active projects, when I made these slides, does not necessarily mean there's 215 spread over 5 years. It's 215 this month. Next month it might be 200, but I have 30% turnover. So it really changes quite a bit in terms of the number of users. So one of the issues with this is, though, is because we have all these unique projects using the system, and this was a snapshot of the breakdown of the proportions of the allocations on the system, is stating data for a lot of these occasional users. There's just no long-term storage. There's no archive to pull from or to move stuff from, and because of the flat structure of the university, every unit's kind of responsible for their own quantities of research storage. And so staging in and out of our system is kind of a bit of a challenge, and we actually found this to be simplified by using the Globus system, because it gave users a visual way. They didn't have to leave laptops open. They'd get emails when transfers were done. Luckily, we do have a relatively strong network on campus, and I will get into that detail a little bit more. But the way we've gone about this is one thing we do have that I guess I'm a Michigan alum, so this is my experience, but I guess this is not that common across a lot of institutions, is we do have a single username space. So everybody at the university has what's called a unique name, which also matches up with a unique Unix UID. And so it allows us to actually use our campus-wide Kerberos infrastructure, hook that up with our own MyProxy server, and we just run a MyProxy service for campus. So we run a single MyProxy server for campus, and then all these individual units, we've made tutorial videos and documentation for how to set up their own Globus Connect personal and Globus Connect server, or what used to be called Globus Connect multi-user, and they stand these up on all their individual storage platforms inside each one of their individual departments. You know, the medical school has multiples for their genomic data and a bunch of other types of data. Econ department has theirs, ran by the liberal arts school, providing storage for a lot of different units. Engineering runs their own. There's just lots of these things around, and so when people are staging data into Flux, they can do it a lot easier through the Globus endpoints at a higher rate, an ease of use with the web interface or scripting using the command line. If they wanted to have more advanced things, and basically they get 10 gig throughput and can do all sorts of fun things into our DDN appliance for data staging, and then of course removing data back out. So one thing that we do have, luckily though, on campus is we do have a relatively strong network recently upgraded. So most buildings have 2 × 10 gig links, and we do have 100 gig, 40 gig backbone around most places. Something we actually do is we do have an InfiniBand gateway. So it lets users be able to move data between some nodes on our HPC service using Globus and a few other things at higher data rates without us having to actually have 2 sets of high-speed networks once inside the cluster. Outside the cluster, it's pretty much this 40-gig, 100-gig thing, and then multiple 10 gigs around. We do take part in one of our data centers actually shares space with Merit, which is pretty much you consider like the ISP for the university, which is basically a Michigan educational internet provider. I do think they cover other places, and then we do take part in Michigan, which is the Michigan addition to National Lambda Rail, as well as Internet 2, and they all share data center space with us. So certain things have been relatively easy. So this is pretty much what we have. It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. Globus really has made it a lot easier for users to stage data in and out of Flux just because of this nature of the flat structured university. So there's lots of different things on campus, and so we really rely heavily on the network for providing archive. From operators of Flux's point of view, the network is the archive. We don't know where your storage is or anything like that. We'll help you set up an endpoint on your end, but Globus, as you saw from some of the other slides, much higher performance, much higher speed. But the Globus Online aspect of, the web client for control, email for notification, really has made it much more trivial and simpler for users to be able to manage large transfers and doing all sorts of crazy things. And we figured out all sorts of hacks you can do, too, for dealing with issues by using Globus rather than using traditional tools that have been quite handy. So that's everything I have. If you have questions, go ahead and put them in the chat box.
Thanks, Brock. I know that we have run over by a few minutes here. Appreciate you all sticking with us to the end here. We have had some active chats, questions going on during the presentations. We're welcome to we can stick on for a few more if folks want to ask questions. The chat questions actually come privately to the presenters, and then the answers are broadcasted out. But we'll make the full transcript available just so you're aware of the questions that were asked. I guess I'll leave it open. I think we were able to answer all the questions that were in the chat as they came in so far. So if anybody else has any questions, feel free to participate now. I just also wanted to remind folks of other opportunities to learn about both Globus and Science DMZ at the upcoming events, both our OIM workshops, tutorials at SC13, as well as paper at SC13. So if there aren't any other questions, we will email the slides out and a link to the presentation and the recording as soon as possible. I just want to thank all the speakers and those who joined us today. We appreciate it.